Welcome to the 260th episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I'm your host, Randy Winograd. In this edition of the podcast, our topics are an overview of Patrick's weekend predictions, a look back at NBA playoff action, and our weekly review of Major League Baseball. So let's jump right in with a look back at Patrick's weekend predictions, which are posted every Thursday on our website, 4thand24.com. And we will start in the NBA, where Patrick went 2-2 with his playoff predictions. In Major League Baseball, Patrick won a perfect 4-0 with his weekend series predictions. You can do the math. That makes him 6-2 this past week, and it brings him to an overall record of 1,062 and 683. That's a 60.9% winning percentage. Patrick, your thoughts on your weekend predictions?
Well, I thought that this week was a pretty good week for me, obviously, given the results that I got. Pleased with the NBA predictions, but overall, since I went 6-2, I don't really care as much. But you know, it was still a week that I can be happy with those results. In the NBA, I guess I'll start with the Cavs beat the Celtics 118-94. Didn't expect the Cavs to take a road game. That game was a game two. The Mavs beat the Thunder 119-110. Also didn't expect them to take a road game. But we'll talk more about those series later. So I got those two wrong. And then the Pacers beat the Knicks 111-106 at home. And then the Nuggets, I thought there was no way they could go down 3-0. So they did go on the road and beat the Timberwolves 117-90, which were the two correct predictions that I had. And then in MLB, the Red Sox took 2-3 from the Nationals, three really close games in that series. But Red Sox came out on top. The Twins took 2-3 from the Blue Jays. A lot of scoring in the first few games of that series, and then a good start by Bailey Ober in the Sunday game to clinch the series for the Twins. The Braves took 2-3 from the Mets. They should have swept them, but they got walked off on Sunday Night Baseball in a game that they were up 3-2 heading into the ninth. And a Brandon Nimmo two-run home run was the game winner for the Mets, so that they avoided the sweep. But Braves still won, obviously. And the Yankees took 2-3 from the Rays. They had a big deficit, I think, in one of their games, but came back to overcome that and won that series overall. Scored 10 runs in the Sunday game, I believe. So good series for the Yankees and a good week of predictions for me, obviously, going 4-0, getting all of those right, and 6-2 overall. The NBA predictions this week, I think, should still happen, because I think only the Celtics can clinch the series before Thursday, but we'll just have to see which predictions end up making it in, depending on how many series are left. I'll at least predict the other three series, the next game in each of those, by the time that it's Thursday. So looking forward to more NBA playoff action, and hopefully I go better than 2-2 next week.
Well, we will see what games are predicted on Thursday, because as always, Patrick's predictions for next weekend will be posted on our website on Thursday. And let's stick with that NBA theme, as Patrick foreshadowed one of those series may be over by then. But let's start with our look at the Western Conference semifinals, and start with the number 2 seeded Denver Nuggets and the number 3 seeded Minnesota Timberwolves, who are tied 2-2.
Well, the last time we checked in with this series, it was Minnesota who had gone on the road to Denver and had won both of the first two games to take a 2-0 lead. But in the last week, despite only playing two games, the extra rest seems to have benefited the Nuggets a little bit. And the Nuggets came back, won both of the games on the road at Minnesota. So we're all even going back to Denver for game 5, which will be tonight. A really interesting theme in that series, because now it's basically just a best of three, with the Nuggets having two home games and Minnesota only having one. But at the same time, Denver lost the two home games, Minnesota lost the two home games. So maybe home court advantage doesn't matter in that series. Kind of an interesting thread going on there. Denver definitely the favorites tonight. But look, going back to Friday, they won that game 3, 117-90. They just really came out strong in the first half, up 56-41 at the half. The leading scorer on Minnesota was Anthony Edwards with 19, so that's obviously not going to get it done. Aaron Gordon had a good night. Michael Porter Jr. was 4-of-5 from 3 with 21 points. Jokic had 24-14-9. Jamal Murray had 24-4-5. So whenever the Nuggets get that type of production from their best players, it's not really easy to beat them at all. And they happened to play pretty well, shot 48% from three as a team. So not very easy to beat them when they do that. Meanwhile, Minnesota had a complete off night. Like I said, Anthony Edwards led the team with 19 points, 30% from the three-point line as a team. Naz Reid struggled, only 7 points. Rudy Gobert only had 6 points. Jaden McDaniels only had 10. He only played 22 minutes. Karl Anthony Towns only took 7 shots, had 14 points. So, you know, just a lack of, honestly, shots even getting up from the Timberwolves side of things. And Denver out-rebounded them, did a better job on the defensive end, made sure to limit the possessions for the Timberwolves. They had 14 turnovers to Denver's 10. And then that rolled into the fourth game, excuse me, of the series, where this was really a battle of Jokic dominating the first half with Aaron Gordon. Michael Porter Jr. only took 4 shots in the entire game. I feel like he normally at least gets up 8 or 9 every single game, no matter what the circumstances are. But he didn't need to. Jokic had 35, 7, and 7. He was 15 of 26 from the floor. Aaron Gordon was 5 of 5 from the field at halftime, ended the game 11 of 12 from the field with 27 points, 7 rebounds, and 6 assists as well. And then off the bench, Christian Brown had 11, and Justin Holiday had 10 points on 3 of 5 shooting from 3. Jamal Murray only had 19 points, but 8 assists to go with that, 5 rebounds. A decent game for him, more like what his regular season stats look like. Of course, in the playoffs, he always seems to elevate a lot, but that game looking more like his regular season numbers, which are still good numbers. But as a team, he shot 45% from three. That was definitely good enough to claim that victory. On the other side of things, it was just Anthony Edwards. Karl Anthony Towns was 5 of 18 from the floor, only had 13 points. Mike Conley had 15 points, was 5 of 12. Naz Reid had 11 points, was 5 of 6. But other than that, no one else made more than everybody. Those three made 5 shots. And no one else made more than 5 other than Anthony Edwards, who had 44 points on 16 of 25 shooting. But, you know, 16 of 25 looks great, but Jokic was 15 of 26 and Aaron Gordon was 11 of 12. So you combine those two, 26 of 38 from the Nuggets' best two players. Meanwhile, yeah, you could throw Naz Reid in there and say that the Timberwolves, excuse me, were 20 of 31 with their two best shooters, but Naz Reid didn't play as much, so you can't really say that much. And look, Ant needs help. I mean, 15 points from the second leading scorer in the game, and that being Mike Conley, is just not enough. They're not going to be able to beat the Nuggets with just Ant being the one who contributes, especially with the way that Denver was playing on the offensive end. Minnesota can play defense at a better level. They can win a game in the series with 107 points for sure. It's just that it's going to be hard, even with how good their defense is, it's going to be hard to slow down the Nuggets to actually be able to win with that number. So they are going to need a little bit more offense and a little bit better performance on the defensive end. I'm not saying they need to hold them under 100 like they did in the first two games, but they do need to get back to a little bit better defensive showings.
Okay, well, let's move to the other series in the Western semifinals, where the number one seeded Oklahoma City Thunder and the number five seeded Dallas Mavericks are now tied 2 apiece.
Yeah, this I think has been the most even series in really all of the playoffs. The Thunder, the only really game that wasn't close was game one. The Thunder won 117-95. That's what had me convinced that they would win game two at home as well. But going back to that game one, the Thunder just got good performances really from everybody. Solid shooting from Chet Holmgren, solid shooting from both the Jalen Williamses. Aaron Wiggins had 16 points off the bench on 5 of 7 shooting. He had 3 threes. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had 29, 9, and 9. One Jalen Williams, the one from Santa Clara, had 18 points. Jalen Williams from Arkansas had 11 points. I guess it is useful to know where guys went to college sometimes in this case. Then Chet Holmgren had 19 points. Also had 3 blocks in that game, so had a big impact there. And then on the Dallas side of things, you know, Tim Hardaway struggled in his first game back, but that's important to note for later. Josh Green had 11 points off the bench, but other than that, the leading scorer on the team was 20 points, and it was Kyrie Irving, 7 of 14 from the floor. Luka Doncic had 19 points only on 6 of 19 shooting. 19 points on 19 shots is not good enough to beat the Oklahoma City Thunder. Daniel Gafford was 5 of 12 from the floor, which is pretty bad considering that most of the time he's shooting dunks, layups. So that's not really good either. Just overall, just a rough game from the Mavs. PJ Washington was in foul trouble and couldn't play as many minutes as he normally does. But in the second game, the Mavs turned it around, won 119 to 110 on the road. This was the Tim Hardaway breakout game. Finally, he was back from injury, didn't play any games in the first round, I believe. And then he came back in this game, and he had 19 points. He did play. Okay, he did play two games against LA, but not many minutes in those games because he was still working his way back from an injury. But this game, 17 points off the bench. Josh Green, 11 points off the bench. So 28 bench points from those two alone. They got another two from Derek Lively. So good production from there. And then Luka was a lot more efficient. 29 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists. And the real efficiency boost was PJ Washington, who also had 29 points, just like Luka, 11 rebounds and 4 assists for him. He did foul out in this game at the end, but he hit 7 threes before doing so. And again, had 29 points on 11 of 18 shooting. So that was more than enough production for them. Kyrie Irving, just 2 of 8 from the floor in this game, only 9 points, 11 assists, though. And overall, the Mavs shot 49% from 3, which was enough to overcome the 33 points from Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Jalen Williams from Santa Clara had 20 points in this game. Chet Holmgren had 11, but no one else was in double figures. So the Thunder really struggling to find that fourth score in this game specifically. And that kind of came back to bite them because they just couldn't match what the Mavs were throwing at them in terms of scoring production. And then in game three, again, it was the same three for the, or same two for the Mavs, except for this time, Tim Hardaway was replaced by Kyrie Irving. Kyrie had 22 points on 10 of 17 shooting. Luka Doncic had 22 points on 7 of 17 shooting. 15 rebounds and 5 assists for him to go with that. But PJ Washington, again, another solid game. 27.6 rebounds for him. 11 of 23 from the floor. 5 of 12 from 3. Really found his stroke in this game from the 3-point line, which they needed. The Thunder struggled to shoot the 3 again, just 10 of 30 as a team. Isaiah Joe did have 13 points off the bench. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had another 30 points. He had 31 in this game. Jalen Williams had 16. Chet Holmgren had 13. So, you know, the Thunder keep getting the same, pretty much the same scoring numbers from those guys every single night. And to win, I think they just need one other guy to come in off the bench, or really Josh Giddey or Lu Dort in the starting lineup to step up. But they just didn't get that in game two or game three. And Dallas won that game three, 105-100. To 101, excuse me. But then in game four, they did get that production from a fourth guy. In this game, it was Lu Dort. He had 17 points. Not great shooting numbers, 4-14 from the floor, but that reflected the whole game. 38% from the field for the Thunder, just 41% for the Mavs. So a really ugly shooting night from both teams. But Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had 34 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists. On 14 of 27 shooting, Chet Holmgren had 18 points, 9 rebounds. Jalen Williams was 5 of 19 from the floor, but he did have 14 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists. So, you know, some rough shooting numbers all around. Same thing on the Mavs side. Luka shot 6 of 20. Kyrie was 4 of 11. Kyrie only had 9 points in this game. Luka had 18, 10, and 12. But then PJ Washington again led the team in scoring with 21 points and 12 rebounds on 7 of 19 shooting. So just some ugly shooting numbers all around. Derek Jones Jr. found a way to participate in this game. He had 17 points on 7 of 12 shooting, but really game four was a night of ugly shooting for both teams. One that the offenses would like to put away and not remember going into the rest of the series, but OKC did even it up now going back home, where both of the series in the West are tied 2-2. So mini best of three for both of those teams, or in both of those series. I think advantage Thunder in this series, though, given that they're going back home, and I think they've found their better stride, and they haven't even played super well offensively, so they can still get into a better gear offensively before this series is over.
Yep, both 2-2 with a team with home court advantage heading home. We'll see if anybody in the Denver-Minnesota game can win a home game. All right, let's move over to the Eastern Conference semis. You told us about the one that doesn't have much drama, so we'll start with the one that does have drama. The number 6-seeded Indiana Pacers and the number 2-seeded New York Knicks are tied at 2 games apiece.
Yeah, I mean, if you can even call the Knicks a team anymore, they are starting to lose their grip on the series. They're just getting so injured. It's really hard to comprehend. We already know that they're that heading into the series, they were, or excuse me, at the beginning of the series, Mitchell Robinson got injured after game one. But going into game two, he was out. And then OG Anunoby, I believe, or sorry, no, Jalen Brunson, excuse me, in this game got injured. Actually, OG got injured in this game too. They both got injured in this game. But still, despite the fact that Jalen Brunson did not play his normal 40 plus minutes and OG did not play his normal 40 plus minutes, the Knicks still only used seven players plus 1 minute of Alec Burks. They won this game 130 to 121 to take a 2-0 series lead at home. Dante DiVincenzo had 28. Brunson had 29 despite the injury. OG had 28 despite his injury. Josh Hart had 19 points, 15 rebounds, 7 assists. So big production from him. You know, it's hard to find a Knicks player that doesn't contribute a lot, considering that only six or seven of them end up playing every game. But then on the Pacers side of things, Obi Toppin had 20 points. TJ McConnell had 10 points, 12 assists. Haliburton 34, 9, and 6. Nembhard 15 and Siakam 14. So Pacers getting good scoring in the series. They just weren't able to play good defense in this game. But then things shifted in game three, where the Pacers went home. They played better defense. The Knicks still running a seven-man rotation pretty much. This time, Jericho Sims 4 minutes off the bench. Miles McBride end up playing. Or sorry, Sims would be the eighth man in the rotation, but I don't really know if you can count just the 4 minutes that he played. Precious Achiuwa was in the starting lineup to replace OG Anunoby. Dante DiVincenzo had 35 points in this game, which is just crazy. Josh Hart had 10 points, 18 rebounds, 4 assists. Jalen Brunson had 26. Burks had 14 off the bench. McBride had 10 off the bench. So good scoring really all around from the Knicks, but not quite enough because they just looked kind of tired on the defensive end. It was hard for them to slow down on the Pacers. They tried to play at a slower pace. I mean, you could tell because they shot 52% from three and 48% from the floor and only scored 106 points. Meanwhile, the Pacers, they were able to get 13 offensive rebounds against the Knicks since they were playing a lot of small ball. Miles Turner had 21 points, 10 rebounds. Siakam, 26 points, 7 rebounds. Haliburton, 35 points, 7 assists, 4 rebounds. And then Aaron Nesmith was the only other guy in double figures at 10 points. But overall, Pacers did not shoot better than the Knicks. They actually shot worse, but they had 9 extra shots to work with. And they didn't even make as many threes, but, you know, they played better defense overall. And that was just enough to barely beat the Knicks in that game three. And then game four was just not close at all. This is where it really felt like the Knicks' lack of depth caught up to them. Tibbs did the smart thing in the second half to sub out his guys and not have people play a ton of minutes in a game where they were super, super injured and just down by a lot. But DiVincenzo only had 7 points in the whole game. Brunson had 18. The leading scorer was Alec Burks with 20 points off the bench. And Miles McBride had 16 points as well, but only Brunson, McBride, and Burks were in double figures. They shot 19% from three as a team. And then meanwhile, on the Pacers side of things, you had one, two, three, four, five, six players in double figures. That would be Siakam with 14, Miles Turner with 13, Haliburton with 20, Obi Toppin with 14, Isaiah Jackson with 10 points, and TJ McConnell with 15 points, who also led the team in assists with 10 assists. So look, great defense by the Pacers in this game. They might have wasted one of their better offensive games on a game where they didn't really need much. But at the same time, credit to the Pacers for tying the series up at two. It'll be very interesting to see if they can go on the road and beat New York, considering the injury statuses of all of those players on the Knicks. I don't exactly know if OG is playing in this game or not. We know that Mitchell Robinson is not, but I don't know if OG is playing or not. Actually, no, the ruling is that he is out for this game. So that is interesting. I guess they're saying he might return for game six or game seven, but for now, he is out. So this is the Pacers' opportunity to really, really steal a game on the road. This will be their best chance to win a road game. And if they're going to win the series, they do have to win one on the road. So if they're going to win the series, they pretty much, I'd say tonight is a must win because then you could close it out at home in six. But if you don't win this game, I think you're losing at MSG in seven. So Pacers need to win tonight. But at the same time, it's still a tough task to win at MSG. They're going to have to do it at some point, though. So advantage Knicks still, honestly, in my opinion. You know, they're going to utilize the extra rest, hopefully, to their advantage. But the Pacers definitely would swing the series massively in their favor if they could win tonight.
All right, well, let's move over to that Boston-Cleveland series that you gave us a little sneak peek on. The number one seeded Celtics lead the fourth seeded Cavaliers 3-1.
I believe when we talked about our predictions for the series, I said the Celtics would win in six because they'd lose some random home game. I was right. Look, the Celtics won game one, 120-95. Everything looked like, okay, this series won't be close. You know, Donovan Mitchell did his thing. He had 33 points. Okoro had 11. Garland had 14. Mobley had 17 and 13. But on the Boston side of things, Peyton Pritchard had 16. Jaylen Brown had 32. Derek White had 25. Jason Tatum had 18 points. Drew Holiday had 14 points. Jason Tatum's playing like a role player and it doesn't matter in that game. So, I mean, look, you can't beat the Celtics like this if you're the Cavs. They're just not deep enough. But then in game two, the Celtics did their weird thing where they, for some reason, pick a game where they just do not shoot the ball at home. They shot 40% from the field, or 41% from the field, 8 of 35 from 3, which is 23% if you didn't want to do the math yourself. No one shot well. Jaylen Brown was 0 of 6 from 3. Derek White was 1 of 8 from 3. Those two only combined for 29 points. Meanwhile, both of them went for 25-plus in game one. Peyton Pritchard had another 13 off the bench, which was good production. But Jason Tatum led the team in scoring with 25, but on an inefficient 7 of 17 shooting. Donovan Mitchell took over this game, 29 points. Caris LeVert had 21 points off the bench. Max Strus had 12 points. Mobley had 21. Okoro had 12. Garland had 14. So six double-figure scorers for the Cavs, including three guys with 20-plus. So that was all they needed to take a commanding game over the Celtics. And then all of a sudden, when it goes back to Cleveland, you're thinking, okay, they can maybe keep this close. This could be a little bit more interesting than we thought. But then the Celtics come out. They win game three, 106-93 on the road. Jason Tatum, 33 points. Jaylen Brown, 28 points. Jaylen Brown missed four shots in this entire game, which is crazy to me. But then no bench production needed, really. Only 13 points off the bench in total. Derek White had 12. Drew Holiday had 18 points. But then on the Cavs side of things, Okoro only had 2 in this game. Garland had 15, but Strus only had 6. Caris LeVert did have 15 points off the bench. That's some good production there. But then Mobley had 17 and 8. Donovan Mitchell had 33 again. But, you know, if he's scoring 30-ish a game, that's pretty normal for him, as much as that's crazy to say. And without having Jared Allen in the series, they are missing some extra scoring that they normally get from the post and a lot of rebounding. So when he only gets around 30, they honestly don't have much of a chance in the game just because they need him to go for like 30 or 40. But unfortunately, in game four, he got 0 because he was injured and he was out. So all of a sudden, that was a big change in this series. The Cavs really needed that game four to tie it up at 2 apiece. And then Donovan Mitchell, of course, not playing in that game. That was a very, very big deal. It means that Cleveland's bench is just stretched really thin because LeVert is now in the starting lineup. Okoro also in the starting lineup as a result of the Jared Allen injury. So they were just really, really thin depth-wise. Darius Garland had 30 points in that game. Mobley had 19. LeVert had 19. And Strus had 15. So they kept it close. They only lost by 7, 109-102. But I don't even think the Celtics played their best game. I mean, Al Horford only had 6 points. Derek White was 1 of 6 from the floor. Jaylen Brown had 27. Jason Tatum had 33. Drew Holiday had 16 points, and that was just enough to get that game four. I kind of expect Boston to win this series in 5 games. I think they can easily win that that Wednesday game. They're favored by 15.5 points because all of the four players for the Cavs are game time decisions. Donovan Mitchell, Jared Allen, the two notable ones in terms of the injuries. The other two don't really play that much, but the Celtics definitely in firm control of that series as it heads back to Boston for game 5.
All right, that wraps up our look at NBA playoff action. Let's now turn our attention to Major League Baseball with our weekly review of MLB action, starting as always in the American League East.
Yep, in the AL East, you have the Baltimore Orioles. Not quite the best record in baseball, but definitely the best record in the American League. And technically, the Yankees tied with them. Just Baltimore better on win percentage, but both of these teams, same level of games back in the standings, if you were to do it that way. Yankees 27-15, Baltimore 26-14, both of them 7-3 in their last 10. You have the Red Sox, who are third, 21-20 is their record. They are 3-7 in their last 10, but Tampa Bay has started to catch up. 7-3 in their last 10 has allowed them to move to 21-21 and even 500 on the season. They are playing Boston right now, and they won the first game of that series. And then you have Toronto at the bottom of this division, who still continues to struggle, 19-22 on the season, 4-6 in their last 10 games. So the East still looking pretty good, top to bottom. The Red Sox haven't hit as much of a wall as people kind of expected them to once their schedule turned over. I think this is a, you know, probably at least an 80-win team. I don't necessarily think they will be a playoff contender when you look at how strong the AL is overall. But they're a team that can at least give some teams some fits. And you know, maybe if they can get healthy quick, maybe make a few trade deadline acquisitions, then maybe they can be a playoff team. But for now, just kind of floating in the very, very competitive but not quite playoff ready range. But speaking of playoff ready, three teams in the AL Central that you could make that argument for right now. At the top, you have the Guardians at 26-16. They're 6-4 in their last 10. The Twins are 24-16. 7-3 in their last 10, obviously had a big winning streak heading into last week, but that did get snapped. And now they've still played pretty well for the last week, though. So they're at 24-16, just two games back in the win column of Guardians. And then the Royals, who were 25-18, also above 500, 1.5 games back. And then the Tigers, sitting at the exact same record as the Red Sox. You know, not necessarily a roster that needs to compete this year when you consider how young they are, but it would be nice to take a step forward, which I think they have so far. If they can keep this up and around 81, 82 wins, I'd say it was a successful season for them as long as they actually make some moves next year to get better. But we'll see, because they have been notably stingy in free agency recently. And then, of course, you have the worst record in the league, the Chicago White Sox at 12, or sorry, not the worst record in the league, worst record in the American League, second worst record in MLB, 12-29. For the White Sox, but 6-4 in their last 10. So showing some signs of improvement somehow. And then finally in the West, you have the Mariners at 23-19 leading this division. The worst record by a division leader in all of baseball, which is honestly surprising considering that this division has the defending champs in it. A team that pretty much wins 100 games every single year in Houston and also Seattle in it. So not something you would expect, but at the same time, that's what it is for now. They're 14-9 at home, though, which is good for Seattle. I think they always are really, really good at home. But they are definitely taking advantage of that. If they could just be a little bit better on the road, they can really run away with this division, because currently they're under 500 on the road. But they're 6-4 in their last 10. Meanwhile, the Rangers have struggled, lost four in a row, 5-5 in their last 10 to move to 22-21 on the season. They need to pick it up. The AL is really, really tight. And right now they're on the verge of actually having a wild card spot. They need to play a lot better, though, to keep it that way. Then you have the A's. They trended upwards for a week. They got to 500 on the season, actually, at some point. I think they were 17-17, but they are 19-24 now, 3-7 in their last 10. The Astros are still struggling. 16-25 is their record. They've stabilized a little bit. They're 5-5 in their last 10. Christian Javier came back off the IL, but even when he came back, he gave up seven runs. So, I mean, you know, it seems like even when this team gets good news, it doesn't really ever turn into anything anyway. So the Astros just kind of having one of those dog days. It feels like the dog days of the season have just come early for them. I think that's the best way to describe it. But then you have the Angels at 15-27. They are 3-7 in their last 10. But overall, they're just kind of bad. It is what it is. Mike Trout's injured too, so that's not going to help them get any better going forward. And overall, this division has been a little bit weaker than you would think, with some odd teams sitting in some odd positions considering preseason expectations.
Let's move on to the National League and go over to the East Division.
The NL East, the Phillies are leading, 29-13 is their record. That's the best record in all of baseball. The Braves are sitting at 25-13. Braves currently holding that second place down. Still a good record, though, overall. Second best record in the National League if you're going by winning percentage, which is hard to track since the Dodgers, for some reason, have played like five extra games over every team, which we'll talk about that later. But then you have the Nationals in third at 19-20 and the Mets right behind them at 19-21. Both of those teams just probably going to end up even 500. The Mets with a little bit more expectations than the Nationals, obviously, based on what contracts they have on the books, but at the same time, didn't really do much to be competitive this year. So I don't really think you can expect them to be a super, super competitive team. But the Nationals, a young team just looking to build towards the future, maybe have an ascent like a team like the Guardians next year, or even the Brewers who are pretty young, or like the Diamondbacks last year, that kind of a thing. But for now, they are still sitting in third place. And then you have the Marlins, worst record in all of baseball, 11-32. Same run differential as the White Sox, but that's also the worst in all of baseball. Just really, really a struggle for this team all season long. And then finally, in the Central, you have the Brewers at 24-17 and the Cubs not far behind at 24-18. None of these teams actually in this division having a strong week. We'll get to someone who had a really rough week at the end of it, but 4-6 in their last 10 for the Brewers, 5-5 for the Cubs. The Pirates, 19-23. They're 5-5 in their last 10. Paul Skenes, though, did make his debut against the Cubs. It was fun to watch, but then the Pirates walked, I think, 6 straight batters, loaded the bases right after he left, and then also lost control of that game as a result. So just some interesting wrinkles there. Paul Skenes coming up is definitely big news. Jared Jones has been good for them all year. So we'll see if they can maybe get some extra offensive production from some of the guys that are struggling there. Then St. Louis and Cincinnati tied in last. And this is the first time that St. Louis has not been dead last on their own in a long time. But 17-24, the record for them and the Reds. Difference is the Reds have lost 9 of their last 10. So they are really, really hitting a rock. They're just in a slump right now, the slump of all slumps. And then in the West, you have the Dodgers at 28-15. Just behind the Phillies for the best record in baseball and also in the National League. They do have the third best win percentage. Although, again, they are 13 games above 500. The Braves are 12 games above 500. So I don't know what you want to do with that information, but the extra games the Dodgers have played have skewed that stat a little bit, harder to track who actually has the better record. But 8-2 in their last 10, playing well overall, especially the pitching staff recently has come to life. Only the Braves have allowed fewer runs in the entire National League than the Dodgers. Actually, in baseball, it's just the Red Sox and the Yankees that you could add to that category as well. So the Dodgers really, really getting their pitching kicked into high gear. I believe they had 18 straight games without allowing four runs or more. Without allowing more than four runs. And I think that streak might still be alive. But look, just great starting pitching all around there. I think there were only 3 games where they did allow 4 runs in that span. And just enough offense to get them over the edge in most of those games. And some of those games, just pure domination when the offense really comes alive. Then you have the Padres, who did take the weekend series from the Dodgers, 22-22 on the season, 6-4 in their last 10. The Diamondbacks are 20-22. They had a walk-off last night against the Reds, 6-4 in their last 10. The Giants at 19-24, 4-6 in their last 10. And then the Rockies, they're kind of climbing out of the really, really terrible territory by winning 5 games in a row. They're up to 13-28 on the season, which is still the second worst record in the National League. But, they're not down there with the Marlins and the White Sox anymore. Now, the next goal for them would be to catch the Angels record and see if they can do that. But the National League West, not really a competitive division yet, even with the Padres having the season series so far over the Dodgers. I believe they're 5-3 against LA this season, but the Dodgers still with a 6.5 game lead in that division.
Yeah, and that Dodgers streak is still alive. 20 straight games of no more than 4 runs allowed, and they are 16-4 in that stretch. All right, well, that wraps our look at Major League Baseball for this week. It also wraps this edition of the 4th and 24 podcast. Please be sure to check out our next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, May 21st, where we will once again look back at Patrick's weekend predictions, have our look at the NBA playoffs, and again, another weekly review of Major League Baseball action. In the meantime, please be sure to check out Patrick's additional content, including his picks for next weekend's games that will be posted, as always, on Thursday, and his Major League Baseball power rankings, which will be posted tomorrow. All of that content on our website, 4thand24.com. That's the number 4, THAND, the number 24.com. Thank you for listening.